Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's Monday, March 4th, 2024. And thanks so much for being with us today. We've got a wonderful guest today, returning guest Reed Saris. Reed is a high school social studies teacher, okay, and just returned to the classroom, which is an important statement. He's been the founder of Equal Opportunity Schools, been a consultant to schools across the country. He lives in Washington State. He has just returned to the classroom, I assume as a social studies teacher, but he is also a candidate for state superintendent in Washington. All right, and I've got everything linked here if you want to learn more about him. He is an author as well, busy man. Okay, he's the author of a book called The Kid Across the Hall from Stanford University Press. So please check it out. Listen to the show. I think you're going to find Reed absolutely enjoyable. As I say, he's a returning guest. Loves having him on the few times he's been with us, and I'm glad he's back today. Please go over and check out what we do over at ace-ed.org. Everything's free over there for you, all about equity. The Equity Awards, our magazine, Equity and Access, plus all kinds of other stuff just for you in pre-K-12 education over at ace-ed.org. And with that, I'll say good morning to the one, the only Reed Saris. Hi, Reed. Welcome back.
Good morning. Good morning, Larry. It's great to be back with you.
Well, it's nice to have you here, and it's early in the morning there, 7:30 out in Washington. I assume it's cloudy. Tell me I'm wrong.
It's mixed. We got some blue skies, some clouds here.
Excellent. Okay, I'm glad to. I hope it turns out to be a nice day. You're in Seattle, right? Am I right? Or near there? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. It's always cloudy. Yeah, it's always sunny in Philadelphia where I'm from, but it's always cloudy in Seattle. What can I tell you? You know, that show did not do as well as the Always Sunny in Philadelphia one did. Okay, what can I tell you? Before we go further, I just wonder, when did you write your book, The Kid Across the Hall?
Over the last 15 years or so, and it just came out.
All right, let me ask
September.
It a different way. When was it published? When was it published?
It came out this past fall in September.
That's what I thought. And now talk about it, because I want people to understand about it, because you worked hard. It's from Stanford University Press. We haven't talked since it came out, so tell me all about it.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, so I spent a lot of time since my teaching days in South Carolina writing about the experiences there, what it was like in the classroom, what we encountered. Is the first half of the book, and it's mostly stories and experiences of what it's like to be in the classroom with kids, trying to lead them in conversations in a circle. We would discuss all sorts of cool issues, and you have awkward silences, you have, you know, difficulties, you got breakthroughs, the whole nine yards. And then the second half is all about launching a national nonprofit based off of what we learned in South Carolina, focused on making sure everyone has access to great classes within their school.
I hope they do. And you were in, what got you from South Carolina to Washington?
Well, it's funny that you started with the weather, because it was definitely the weather. I was up in Boston, and you could try to cross the street as many layers as you want to wear in the winter just to go to the convenience store and get something and be chilled to the bone. So I asked everybody, where do people have time to, you know, actually hang out outside and the weather's nice? Maybe they sit around on their front porch and talk with each other. And people said around Charleston, Savannah. So I drove around between those and found Buford on the coast there that had a nice IB school going and program, and ended up there.
Wow. Buford, South Carolina. I have been there, my friend. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Some great authors, I might add, from Buford, South Carolina. Can you name it?
Yes, the water is wide was actually Pat Conroy taught in the same Beaufort County Public Schools that I taught in. And
Right, man. Pat Conroy,
yep.
Okay, Prince of Tides, Beach Music, you can go on and on and on. I love his stuff. Okay, Beaufort, South Carolina, I've certainly been there. Okay, and the water is wide, as the court was made, just so we know, this was made into the movie Conrack with John Voight.
Yes.
Just so everybody knows that. Okay, or maybe Reed Saris was the character on that. Okay, so you went there. I didn't know you. Are you from Boston? I didn't know that.
No, I was just going to school and got really, really cold.
Okay. Because I live in Maine, where, by the way, it's March 4th. I want to just say that, and it's about 50 degrees today, right around there, and most of the snow is gone. This has been a very weird winter. I just want to say that to you. Warm, very little snow, just nuts here. But I want to get into all this other stuff with you, Reed. Okay. Again, the book is called The Kid. Why did you name it The Kid Across the Hall? I was curious about.
Well, it's you're teeing up these topics well by bringing up Pat Conroy. So The Water Is Wide was about a school system divided across schools, in this case by the Broad River in South Carolina. He thought of it as two separate school systems. And when I got there, school integration had taken place, and what the real dividing line became was the hallway. And on one side of the hallway, you had kids from a certain background learning a certain set of things, and on the other side, you had another type of kid learning another type of thing. And so that was the metaphor for me that really stuck and that I became impassioned about from my own best friend's experience learning across the hall and not getting as great a set of opportunities up until what was going on in South Carolina. And how do we cross that divide and make sure everyone has access?
The hallway can be wide too, as well as the river, the water, excuse me. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Exactly.
Okay. And now I'm trying to go through all the things that make up Reed Sarris. Okay. You're still running for state superintendent, right?
Yes, the Seattle Times just came out with a piece on us yesterday in the Sunday paper. We're doing well.
I'm sure you're doing well. I hope you win, for goodness sakes. Okay. By the way, a lot of states, it's an appointed position. In Washington, obviously, it's an elected position. Okay. And that would be really cool if you won. I would love it if you win. Okay. The election is in November.
Yes, we have a top two nonpartisan primary in August, and then the main election in November, the general.
Wow, that's cool, man. Got to be excited about that. All right, and I'm going to let you run this because we're going to talk here. You wanted to name this, Where Do We Go From Here in Public Education? Okay, and that's an important thing, all right? So I want to ask you, and just went back, I want to put this in perspective for everybody. Talk about what you're doing now back in the classroom, how this affects your run for state superintendent, and where you're going to take schools if you do win this election, and I hope you do, because you are really a good guy.
Absolutely, yeah. So I was working on the book, and I was just getting nostalgic about all these times with kids in the classroom, and I said, wow, you know, that's where the magic happens, and all the policy and different things we want to do, it really comes down to teacher and a set of kids building a relationship and figuring things out. So that inspired me to go back into the classroom. And I got to say, you know, the kids are as amazing as ever, come from every background, every language, every set of experiences, all sorts of challenges, incredible dreams, you know, that are now informed by technology and all sorts of cool things in new ways that I never imagined. And I think the challenge, you know, that I found there was, it was more difficult than I remember it being before. And so I think that comes from a lot of my seniors had come out of the pandemic. We got smartphones and social media and all of these forces that I think are getting in the way of teachers and students really having those meaningful conversations and learning in the ways that I think we would all like to see happen more often. So that got me thinking a lot about, you know, what are those new obstacles? Where are they coming from? And what can we do about that so that teachers can do their jobs and kids can have an incredible experience growing up and learning in our public schools?
And boy, you go in there, got to go in there with eyes wide open, okay? How long has it been since you were in a classroom for real, teaching?
Yeah, so I had been away for about 15 years working on
and you're,
graduate
you're
school
away at the
and
age of
nonprofit.
Technology, so every year is like dog years.
Exactly.
Okay, every year is like 7 years, okay?
Yes. So I came back and, smartphones and social media and all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just, it's taken over in a way that's really, you know, I think I was reflecting the other day, we took our oldest son is about to finish up elementary school this spring. He'll start middle school in the fall. We went to the middle school orientation, and I was thinking, what an exciting thing, you know, our first kid who's going to go on to middle school. And at the same time, I felt what I think a lot of teachers, parents feel like, what's going to happen here with social media? What's going to happen in today's world of adolescence? And I think, you know, that creates a ton of worry. And I think the thing that, you know, motivates me to run for office and otherwise is there are things that we can do about this. We don't have to accept as the new normal this idea that kids are going to be pulled down a rabbit hole, you know, by these apps, and that we just have to give up their adolescence and, you know, it's going to be they're going to be isolated from each other. We're going to have these high, I've documented a lot of these higher rates of anxiety and depression and suicidality.
Oh,
and I
terrible
just,
out there not, right now. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think we have to settle for it. The good news is that there are things we can do that are highly effective, and we don't have to wait for D.C. and the next round of, you know, testimony from the social media companies that results in nothing. Like, I think states can make changes, so that's really motivating me.
Well, let's go there, okay? And I want to combine the two that you went, just went back. I got the impression you're teaching high school now, high school social studies. And is it full-time, or are you subbing, or what's going on with that?
Yeah, I did a long-term sub position for the past five months. It's just wrapping up.
And I got to ask, because I'm an old social studies teacher, what are you teaching?
Yeah, I got to teach Theory of Knowledge, which is an IB class about philosophy.
Wow.
And very, very, very well on point for the current, you know, situation with kids, because how do you know what's true? What do you think of as true? Where do you get your information? What do you trust? How do you analyze that and come to an understanding is a really important set of questions, I think, today.
It really and truly is. And are you teaching private, public school? What are you teaching right now?
Public school, yeah, in the Seattle
public school. Public school. An IB course.
Yeah.
I love it. That's just great. Okay, so you're back in the classroom. You're talking to teachers. You're talking to, obviously, your administrators. You're working with the kids. Okay, this is wonderful because you want to be the state superintendent. And by the way, you were highly qualified for that before you went back to teaching. But to go back into it is really something. So, and it's post-pandemic. Okay, there's a lot of social emotional challenges. I almost said problems, but I'd rather use the word challenges out there right now. There's academic learning loss, etc. Okay. All right. Now you're talking about running the state schools. Okay, which I think is wonderful. Talk about how this experience already has maybe changed you, what you're looking at, et cetera, and where do we go from here? You could be in the catbird seat, my friend. Where do you go from here?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think, you know, like I said, the kids are incredibly talented. The educators are really talented. And what we lack a lot of times are the systems to support what goes on in the classroom. And so that's where, whether you're talking about mental health, whether you're talking about learning loss, whether you're talking about the big challenge of how do you make sure kids are matched with great opportunities after they graduate for their career in college. These are things that it's pretty hard to build, I think, at the school level or even at the district level. It's you know, figuring out all the evidence. It's putting, you know, for example, on the mental health front, I love the U.S. Surgeon General's guidance on youth mental health and social media, but the idea that every single school and district is going to read that and figure out the implications for their own programs and policy, it just doesn't work that way. People don't have time for that. And so that, to me, is the power and possibility of state leadership to start to say, hey, here's the best practices from around our state. Here's the best practices from around the country. Here's the latest insights from the U.S. Surgeon General. And here's what we can do about it. Let's get things ready for districts and schools to be able to use to address these challenges, because the world is changing faster, I think, than ever. And that's exciting in a lot of ways. But you got to keep up to be able to support schools and kids. So that's the kind of leadership I want to bring. And let's look at the evidence. Let's get solutions in place. Let's help people to field those challenges as they emerge.
Well, that actually brings up a great question, Reed. Okay. These days it's hard, and you know this, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, teacher retention. Okay. It's hard to keep teachers in their job, and we don't have a lot of people in the pipeline. Okay, and that's going to sit to a great deal with the state superintendents in these schools, okay, in terms of recruitment, getting kids involved in education, etc. Okay, how do you handle that? Obviously, you put some thought into it.
Yeah,
and
you're
here. I want to say this again. This is great. You're hearing it, okay, from colleagues, okay, and teachers.
Yeah.
That's who we're talking to. They have a tough job, okay, and I've been in, you know, I used being one, and I've been in them faculty rooms, okay? It's tough, all right? Tough, all right? And I get it, all right? So let's say I'll call you by your new title, I hope, Mr. State Superintendent. What's the actual title? Chancellor? What do they call this?
State Superintendent.
State Superintendent. Mr. Superintendent, okay? What's the answer? How do we go from there? How do we make sure we're helping teachers? And where do you think that's the sweet spot is to do it so we can them and get more people in there?
Yeah, that's a great question.
If you can answer that, run for president.
I mean, I think you partner closely with them to solve the toughest challenges. One of them, I just couldn't even believe in the heart of, Seattle Public Schools these days. My next door neighbor teacher had 40 kids in a history class in one section, a level where, from social studies, that's really hard to have a conversation or to dive meaningfully into things with 40 kids in your class. And then I think, we need consistent and reliable answers. Yeah,
40
yeah, absolutely.
Kids?
Yep, absolutely.
Was it the most popular class in the school, or was it just by accident?
It's just the way they design the numbers and distribute things. Yeah, it's a challenge. And then I think, we need to just do a better job of serving and supporting teachers. And so that means listening to them, learning from them, what are their biggest priorities. In my work so far, it really is. It does come back to cell phones. It comes back to kids' mental health. And it comes back to this learning loss. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you are this is really interesting to me because you said this a number of times. Okay. You are really concerned. You must be seeing something. Okay, hearing something with kids, the mental state of kids, these days. And by the way, as everyone knows that we're talking to, it has changed.
Yeah.
Okay, it has changed. And we are, and the people we're talking to now are not psychologists and psychiatrists. Okay, we're talking about teachers. And the actually, let me throw this out to you. The training of teachers needs to incorporate this into the training of teachers. Okay, you can't teach for a different world the way we were teaching even when you left in 15, 20 years ago. Okay, the kid has changed. The audience has changed. Okay, and it's that simple. And so I'll use CVS as an example. They, all of a sudden you go into CVS, everything's locked up. Okay, people don't like that. Okay, it's uncomfortable. Okay, but they have to. Things have changed out there is my point. Okay, and I guess the point I'm making, I'm going to throw it out there to you. How do we change what a teacher is to make sure if kids go in more well trained for the kids today, they're going to stay longer and they're going to enjoy it more and they're going to be more engaged, etc. And you are very concerned about this kind of stuff because it's not only mental health, of the kids, it's the mental health of the teachers. If we're not teachers, we're not going to be doing anything with the kids, okay?
Absolutely.
I'm throwing all the stuff on your lap here, Reed, but I love talking to you. So I just want your insight,
Yes. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And you're so focused on the mental. You are focused. And that's an important thing these days because there's too many places who do not focus on this. But the customer has changed, okay?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And I think your point is well taken. That with the mental health and the mental and social emotional health of the student, we have to change the way we teach. It's that simple. The customer has changed. What do you think? What do you think, Dr. Doom?
Yes.
It
absolutely.
You're not
the
Dr. Doom. I just said that. I take that back. You're Dr. Good.
Well, you anticipated something that's a little bit doomy that I was about to say because you were asking about how I think about this into the data. So I did put out a paper this past summer with a group called the Children's Alliance on this. And what we found was anxiety and depression, students with symptoms of anxiety and depression up to almost 60%. We found 20% of adolescents with clinical levels of anxiety and depression. And quite possible that this is overreported, but the numbers have gone up significantly. And the reporting at this point by kids, this is a statewide survey in Washington of adolescents, is that almost 1 in 10 report having attempted suicide in the last year. So that's a little bit of, Dr. Doom side of things. But I want to really emphasize the issues that I'm attracted to are ones where there's real solutions. And so that's where I think a lot of people understand the challenge from the classroom level, from the parent level and otherwise. But the exciting news is that there are systems that solve these things reliably, affordably. We've talked with state leaders who've done this. I've talked to the leaders of the system in Great Britain, and they go in and they have a system of, 12 experiences with things like cognitive behavioral therapy, self-study and learning that reliably relieve symptoms of anxiety and depression in adolescents, most adolescents, for 9 or more years. And so these are, it's not something that we have to sort of figure out from scratch and there's no solutions. Those are big solutions. I love the U.S. Surgeon General's guidance on social media and youth mental health. He suggests basic things like enforcing the existing age restrictions for social media, which are not being enforced. Age 13, and you're not supposed to be on before then. And he suggests considering raising it. And if we consider raising the age, think 15 or 16, we have a perfect analogy in our school system, and it becomes an educational challenge. Because what else at age 15 or 16 do we have where we say to kids, hey, we're going to give you access to a really dangerous tool, but before we, and a really powerful and useful tool, but before we give you the keys, we're going to teach you how it works. We're going to supervise your use of it. We're going to permit you, and then you get to drive a car, right? Same thing I think we could do exactly with social media. Take it out of the realm of middle school, put it in as a high school age-appropriate thing that kids are going to learn how to use. And I don't think you enforce this stuff on kids and families. I think you enforce it on the companies. You say, have you verified the ages of the folks that they're actually of legal age to use these platforms? If not, as a company, you're in trouble. And we help kids learn how to use it. And so we don't have to despair over these issues. They're solvable, and there's evidence for how we can do those sorts of
things. You know, that actually brings up something very interesting. With all the talk about social media and how it affects kids, okay?
Yep.
And I've never heard of this, and I don't know if anybody in the universe is doing this. Is there a course on teaching kids how to use social media? I mean, we have media literacy courses. Okay, but that's to discern where you're getting your information. Okay, but social media goes way beyond that. That's social interaction. Okay,
yep.
And I don't know what you're saying. This is striking, very important. Read that. Do you know of anywhere, maybe Britain, where they're actually teaching kids and focusing how to use this incredible tool, which is hurting a lot of people, I have to say.
Yeah, I haven't done an exhaustive study of this. I can tell you that my students, certainly when we read the Surgeon General's advisory and said, have you gotten any instruction on these things? They said none whatsoever. And to me,
Is that amazing?
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And this is an opportunity for the school system. This is an educational challenge. Yeah.
But it goes back to what I was saying before. Okay, the customer has changed. You're not going to win unless you know the customer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And all the things like attention span, you know, should they have their cell phones on them in class?
Yeah.
You know, the research is really clear on a lot of this stuff. If you have your phone in your pocket on you, you lose a grade's worth of learning. They do randomized control trials to distill this stuff out. And so what is the policy that follows the evidence, and how does that work in a local context? What do you want to set up for a principal? What do you want to set up for a superintendent? And not make them design it from scratch, but give them great options and say, here's what the evidence says. Here's some of the best programs. Yeah, we should look to your question and find the best educational courses on this sort of thing.
Exactly.
If they exist. It's a social studies challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, thank you. It really is a social studies challenge. Okay. And this is a good place for social studies to really pinpoint stuff and really create these courses that help kids and help teachers. And I wanted to ask you that. You're back in the classroom. I don't know how much you're in school. How many hours are you in school a day these days?
So I just wrapped up at the start of February with my leave. So I'm full time on the campaign now.
Okay, but prior to that, how often were you in school?
I was teaching every day, 3 classes a day.
Okay, so that's great. Okay, so what I wanted to ask you was, when you talk to colleagues, okay,
yep,
what are they saying about being a teacher?
they're tired. We're all tired.
Yeah.
And it just keeps coming at you. And
yeah, I know.
And that's where, you know, I think the big challenge is teachers are left holding the bag on all this stuff. You know, we certainly
have
talked about it in the past of, you know, society's challenge around poverty and all these sorts of inequities that just show up at the classroom door. But more problems than ever are showing up at the classroom door.
Yeah,
where, to me, I just am inspired to say, let's serve kids better by serving teachers better and address some of these challenges that can be addressed and not just leave it in their lap, because it's unsustainable to just say good luck in there with all these challenges of society with no systems of support.
Absolutely. It's what we're asking teachers to do the way they are trained. Okay, I'm not saying, you know, it's different from the way we used to train them. And by the way, I have to say the education are usually behind on such things. Okay, yeah. And I know that's just a generic statement, but it's for the most part it's accurate. Okay, they run behind, and you just can't keep churning out the same stuff in a different world. You know, and I was making the joke before that we live in dog years as far as technology, particularly in education, goes. Okay, yeah. You look at AI as an example. Talk about dog years. Okay, by the time I do my first thing, AI will already be creating human beings that can do it for me. Okay, you know, it's that simple. And you know, we've really got a lot of concerns out there. It's just so really, really important. I got to tell you. So mental health. Okay. Talk to me about learning loss. I would ask you that. What do you see about learning loss? And I hear different things. I hear some people telling me it's not as bad as they are saying it is, and I hear others saying it is pretty bad, particularly in math. Okay, what are you hearing? And you're a social studies guy like I am. What are you hearing?
Sure, yeah. It varies a lot state by state. So in our state, there's been a lot of burying of the head in the sand and saying everything's fine, everything's going to get better. And the reality is the New York Times just put out a piece a couple weeks ago in the Upshot, and it showed – Mississippi passing by the state of Washington in terms of student learning of math.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think a technology-driven state like Washington, a resource-intensive state with the fastest-growing economy multiple years running, it has these progressive values, and here's Mississippi. Slipping by Washington State in the recovery. And so that's where you have to, again, come back to me to the evidence. This is where you get hope. You see these challenges, and you say, what works? What works? And things like high dosage tutoring work really well. And so we have schools in our state. We have districts that are really taking advantage of this. The federal administration just put out new guidance on, you know, tutoring and support to catch kids up. But you got to look at the data. You got to figure out where to make those matches and to drive progress, because ignoring it is certainly not going to help people to get where they need to get.
It does. Burying your head in the sand is not good. So, all right, now I want to get this. We wind down here. All right. Your campaign, it really, I'll say it this way, now that you're done teaching, starts really in earnest for you right now. It's always been there, okay?
Yes.
But now we're for real, because August is going to be here in dog years in about 10 minutes, okay? And that's when the primary is, okay? How do you set up now? What do you do now? I'm curious.
Talking with people all day, every day, phone calls, meetings, visits, hearing what the challenges are, talking with rural superintendents, talking with urban teachers and leaders, talking with community organizations, talking with donors. And to me, the biggest challenge of an election like this is to get people in this mindset of we can make really significant progress on these issues that are flummoxing us, and that we're just sitting there and saying, I don't know what we could do anything. And sometimes then people lose hope and they say, well, you know, there's not much that we could do, and I'll pay attention to something else where I can make a difference. And we can't lose hope in public schools. They're the backbone of our democracy. They're the engine of our economy.
Without question.
The most important shared project, the raising of the up and coming generation. And so that's where, how do you keep people in that conversation? And give it the attention that warrants, so that we can make real progress and not settle for the status quo.
And let me ask you a more political question, since obviously you got to be a little more political, okay? And I'm just Seattle is the liberal side of Washington. If I may, I'm generalizing here, okay? While good old Spokane in eastern Washington is a bit more conservative.
Sure.
Is that being fair?
Yep.
Am I fair to say that?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay, good. How do you balance the two as you go out there? You've got to be a politician now.
Yeah, that's a great question. They're definitely often talked about as the Cascade Mountains here dividing, you know, up into two states. One's more red and one's more blue. And I've partnered with blue state governors. I partnered with red state governors. And I think at the end of the day, if you're talking about kids learning, you're talking about the well-being of our kids, and you're talking about making sure that everyone graduates with great opportunities, that's where you can get past the partisanship and get down to the work that's needed for our kids. So that's my
You're darn right, because I talk to state superintendents from all over the country, okay, from literally Mississippi, Alabama to California and Oregon, et cetera. I mean, they want the same thing. They may have a different way to go about it, but everybody wants the same thing, okay?
Yeah.
And they want the kids to do better and all that. So, well, you got your work cut out for you, but then again, they got a good guy running here. I hope you win this thing, Reed. Will you stay in touch? Anything we can do to help you, you know I'm here.
Yes. Thank you so much, Larry. This has been incredible conversation, and I very much appreciate your leadership.
Well, I appreciate yours, my friend, and to get out of the classroom like you did and start equal opportunity schools and then now run for state superintendent. You're a good guy, man. You really have the kids' interests at heart, I got to tell you. So good luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I hope you do this, my friend. Keep me in the loop. Okay.
Absolutely. Enjoy the thaw out there this morning.
Good. I'll tell you. It's great. Okay. Enjoy Seattle. Give my regards to the marketplace. Okay. Be good.
Appreciate you. Bye.
Oh, bye. Reed Saris, everybody. I got it all linked. Here's a teacher who's really made a difference. Okay. Like you all do. And he's taken it even to the next level. We'll archive over at a-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thank you.